Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/noship. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And if you're wondering what you should listen to for your Audible free trial, I have a suggestion. You could listen to If Chins Could Kill, Confessions of a B-Movie Actor. It is written by Bruce Campbell and narrated by Bruce Campbell. And I believe Steve has actually read this book.
Yeah, I read it old-fashioned style with the print on the pages. And all that.
But there's nothing wrong with listening to an Audible. If you got a long commute or you like to go for runs or bike rides or whatever.
I know you're out of our podcast to listen to. Perfect filler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
exactly.
Ghost Beaters and Dick Sticks, Ash versus Evil Dead is back. Season 2 is here. The long, long wait is over, and it is just as awesome as you thought it was going to be. So tonight we're going to be covering Season 2, Episode 1, entitled Home. This is a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Paul.
And I am your host, Em. I'd like to remind everybody that we are a listener-supported podcast, so please go to our website at www.noship.net. Click on our support page and you can find the various ways that you can support us. One new way to support us is you can subscribe financially where you can pay $2 a month and that will give you access to other podcasts that we produce. We recently have produced podcasts discussing virtual reality, DNA, other TV shows such as The Sopranos, which is coming out this week. And there'll be more to come as far as that's concerned. So check it out again at our website at www.noship.net. And if you would like to write in feedback to our next podcast discussing Ash vs. Evil Dead, you can find a link to write to us there at our website, or you can write to us directly at noshipnetwork@gmail.com.
All right. So let's get some reactions. What'd you guys think of this episode?
Well, I have a concern. I'm not going to lie. I'm worried they ran out of all their fake blood in the first episode. That's it. There was a lot. It was phenomenal, though. I mean, I'm not going to rate it because, I mean, I'm just going to keep throwing tens out all season. But it was fantastic. It's exactly where I kind of the direction I wanted it to go. I didn't expect any of it. It was all surprises. I thought it was wonderful.
Cool. How about you?
I mean, it actually met my expectations because it's pretty much like it's picked up from where it left off last season. Like you said, Paul, there is a lot of blood, a lot of poo. Or something that looks like poo.
Purple poo.
The creepy kids, whatever they excrete.
I loved it. I loved every last second of it. It carries the tone from season one directly into this episode. No hesitation, no anything. It's almost like one day we're going to watch all of these back to back as one really fucking long movie.
Yeah.
And it's going to be seamless. And let's just get into recap because I'm going to spew out praise for this like blood is coming out of the Deadites' mouth. So
do we do our metal mic quote of the week at the beginning or the end?
I think we do it when we come across it in the show, if I remember correctly.
I can't remember. I'm not even really that prepared. I kept bouncing around with so many. I might just call Mulligan because I was in Evil Dead Overload. I couldn't decide. It was like, oh, that one, oh, that one. I even watched it twice, and I didn't write any of them down. I just couldn't decide. I'm going to do the whole episode for mine.
I think we should just say it now.
Okay.
Okay, go for it. What's yours?
Mine is when Ruby says, I fought with Attila the Hun and Genghis Khan, and this dipshit is my only hope. Oh, fuck. What a mess.
Mine is, do I save her because I should or because she's hot?
I do like the line his dad said. What was his dad's name?
My name's Brock.
You can call me Cock.
But you can call me Cock.
That was funny. I mean, it's the Fall Guy, for fuck's sake. I didn't ever expect him to say that.
Lee Majors, right?
Yep.
$6 million man.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's jump into recap. This is season 2, episode 1, and it's entitled Home, directed by Rick Jacobson, written by Craig D. Gregorio, and produced once again by the Three Stooges of Raimi, Tappert, and Campbell. All right, so we open with a scene of Ruby being chased through what we come to know as a crematorium. I thought it was a school or a hospital at first. Going down some empty hallways, and her now fully grown creepy kids are chasing her down. So like right away, you're just going, well, what the hell? I thought she raised these things to be her minions and take care of business. So after a tussle and getting some gloriously gratuitous vomit on her face, or blood vomit, vomit blood, or
diarrhea vomit
of the mouth, Ruby uses the Necronomicon as a weapon to repel them back, which I thought was pretty cool because she just holds up the book and the eyes light up and it's like, bam. Yeah. So it's like, it's got this comic booky superpower where it can just, you know, push things out of your way. She ends up eventually in what looks like the room where they've got the cadavers laying around that are about to be cremated. And she's flipping through the book and she says M's quote of the week, Metal Mike quote of the week. I fought with Attila the Hun and Genghis Khan and this dipshit is my only hope. What a fucking mess. So she uses an incantation to reach Ash, dipshit in question, you know, and you can see him there, the drawing in the Necronomicon of him holding up the chainsaw. And then we go to Jacksonville. All right, so it looks like when we get to Jacksonville, Ash is enjoying the paradise that he thought Jacksonville would be. I mean, and this looks really familiar to us around here because it's...
Oh, it could be several bars around here.
Yeah, it could be several bars around here. And
I just don't think I've ever heard water trash before until now.
No.
Let's pause for a second and examine the term that Kelly calls. He says Ash isn't El Jefe anymore to Pablo because he keeps calling him that. He's just water trash like everybody else in this town. What do you think water trash means? Because well, I could give you, yeah.
You know, it's white trash people that live by the water, right?
Right.
There's a lot of water trash around these parts, my friend.
And then when Pablo calls that girl a skank after Kelly takes her out, there was some very potent derision there towards that water trash.
Yeah, he could have been turned down a time or two by some of these water trash chicks.
Oh, for sure.
So Ash is living like a king, drunk all day, adored by everyone. Even Eli is getting the royal treatment. So I'm assuming, you know, this is not his personal charm and magnetism that's doing this. This was part of the deal that was brokered by Ruby. Mm-hmm. So all these people are kind of under a spell. Unfortunately for Kelly and Pablo, they're forced into some sort of wage slavery. Yeah, he's a busboy and she's a bartender, apparently. And they're just kind of like, they've got another boss and they're just watching him have a great time sawing kegs in half. And,
I know, just stabbing them.
You know, setting up mom and daughter combos for later on that night and whatever else. So this was almost my quote. But he says, you know, when the mother introduces her daughter Hannah and she's touching the chainsaw, and he says, I'm not drunk enough to know if this is good weird or bad weird, but I'm going to get there.
Exactly.
So as per Ruby's incantation, a sudden storm appears with a hole in the sky, and Hannah and her mom are turned into deadites on the attack. And they're only attacking, you know, our three protagonists here.
Yeah, he was really lucky everybody in that bar didn't get turned, and then they would have been fucked. You know what I mean?
Real lucky. Yeah, nobody got turned because the other person that they did attack besides, you know, the three main protagonists was the bartender, who actually got blended down to nothing. He got pushed into one of the blenders down there, I guess, that was making the margaritas, the drink of Pablo's people.
So do they have giant blenders for something like that?
I don't know. The only reason I know it was technically a blender was the fact that after the show, the special effects guys were talking about it.
I missed that.
Putting it, you know, in a blender. So
cool. I've never seen a blender that big.
Yeah,
no,
I mean,
I haven't either.
We've worked in restaurants around here. I don't know if you guys have ever seen. You guys
not anywhere close.
No, usually if you need a blender that big, they have the big frozen drink machines with the liquor in them that spin, you know, so no blending needed.
Like the Fat Tuesdays looking ones where they just keep moving. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the mom deadite who's attacking Ash and is getting the best of him for most of this scene starts singing a song. Ashy slashy, hatchet and saw, takes your head and skins you raw. Ashy slashy, heaven and hell, cuts at your tongue so you can't yell. And he looks kind of disturbed by this. And then we get a moment where Pablo, you know, throws the chainsaw to him, does the alley-oop, and you think it's you think for a split second that it's going to be, okay, here, he's going to click in, but you're kind of hoping that it doesn't because it's just a retread of what we've already done.
I knew it wouldn't. I knew they wouldn't retread that. I called it, actually, as it was mid-flight. I was like, it's not going to connect this time.
I felt like it wasn't going to. Yeah, I felt the same way because you're just like, nah, they're not going to do
that. See, I was duped. I was like, oh, yeah, here it comes. You know?
Y'all, cha-ching.
Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute.
But then he had a moment that happened to me. It would hit me. Turn on, kill me somehow.
Hit me in the head.
Oh, yeah.
Give you a haircut on one side. It'd look like mine.
So Kelly grabs an axe from the little fire stand thing there, breaks the glass and grabs an axe, and she just goes overkill on the deadite trying to kill Pablo that's trying to take out his eyes. She's still holding on to that anger about mom and dad. You know, she just won't stop because he's even like, okay, Kelly, I think we're good. And blood is just
Is it about everywhere. Mom and dad, or is it that she's been stuck for a year waiting, you know, bartending in this shitty bar with deadbeats?
Let's say one begets the other. Let's say it starts with mom and dad, and it is sustained by that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's a badass.
I think there's a zeal for killing right now.
Yeah.
You see a suppressed glee later.
Yeah, she likes it.
Yeah. When Ash specifically suggests killing Ruby, you see her in the background just like...
Spark up.
Yeah. Yeah. She's ready to do it.
All right, when Ash finally gets his chainsaw, we get some chainsaw dismemberment, Ashley J. Williams style, finally. The limbs are flying, the gore is flying, the blood is flying. A good time is had by all, except for the deadite, who then gets its head blown off after she spews the usual, one by one, we're going to take you, blah, 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 blah. I mean, how many times has he heard that?
Well, it's their job.
Yeah.
It's their job. They're just doing their job.
It's a trademark. It's a trademark. As the words are floating into the air, there's a little C with a circle around it. Copyright. So the three amigos clean up the blood a little bit and put on their thinking caps and try to figure out how to get Ruby and get her for good this time. And this is where Em was saying, you know, she looks gleeful. Kelly looks gleeful that she's going to get to do some damage.
But before we go to that, can we talk about how cool it was that after that woman was decapitated, when her feet was slipping in the blood?
Oh, yeah.
That was hilarious. I forgot about that.
And he's just kind of like looking at it as the blood is squirting out, you know, and he just kind of nudges it with his elbow, like, get out of here. It was genius, though, because you've already got blood everywhere. Why not have a little bit of fun with it? Mess around, you know, get a slapstick humor element.
The Stooge. The whole,
yeah, the Stooges coming back into play. There was some heavy Stooges influence in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just impressed with that stunt person who did that, because the likelihood of falling on your ass, you know, slipping in something like that is very high.
So. Oh, yeah.
Kudos to you. I would be afraid to do it. Even though it's like a minor, you know, bruise when you fall, but it's still like, would you willingly go over there and do that?
Again, after you fell? That'd
multiple
be the
takes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like the first time that you fall and you just bust your tailbone or something, you know, and then they're like, all right, take two, take three, take four. God damn it. So he says, we're going to be back at Jack. We're going to go take care of Ruby and be back in Jacksonville by Friday. And then we're going to have margaritas. Why? And Pablo says, because that's the drink of my people. He's like, that's a little racist, don't you think? So they load up the trailer and they hop in the Delta and they're on their way up north. Ash swills beer as Kelly reads reports about sinkholes happening and violent crime and murder being up by 200% in certain cities. So Ash is just pulling beer out of like a center console keg or something like that.
A cooler.
Yeah, like a little cooler like a cooler that's just sitting there between the two of them. And he says, who drank all the beer? And so Kelly's like, your bladder must be about to explode. And I don't know if you guys caught this, but he says, please, I've been whizzing the whole time.
No, I missed that.
That's because that's right when Pablo's hands possessed. So
awesome.
If you don't catch it the first time, like Steve pointed out, the third time I watched it, so I was able to catch it, but that was funny.
So this dude's just pissing in his pants the whole time they're driving.
Or something. He's pissing in bottles all surreptitiously, like while Kelly's like sitting right next to him.
So Pablo tries to sketch Ruby, but like Emma just mentioned, he ends up drawing the Necronomicon instead because he can't help it because his hand is possessed. So obviously he's having some after effects of having the book on his face. From Dark One, the last episode of season one. So as the crew pulls into Elk Grove, kids play in the rain, taunting each other with Ashy Slashy is coming to get you. And it looks like the two kids that were running off of his porch spray painted Ashy Slashy on the front door. And you could see it as it comes up through the rain.
Yeah.
And here we are at Ash's old house, which Kelly mistakes for a crack house, to see dear old dad. And at first he tells them that his parents died a long time ago, which is only half true. His mother did die a long time ago, and his dad's just dead to him. So Ash goes in for a visit, and some creepy kid of the living variety throws rocks at the Delta because they were with Ash, so they got to be bad people. This town does not like him.
No.
At all.
It's interesting to me that Ash's dad knows what really happened at the cabin, and he seems to understand that Ash is telling the truth about that, but he's more concerned about the fact that Ash ran away and didn't stick up for himself. So he's having to take the brunt of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's his house that's being vandalized.
Right.
You know, he's holed up probably because of that. Doesn't interact with people outside very much. It's probably why he's got a shotgun at the ready.
I have some questions about that whole scenario, because if his dad knows what really happened, but the townspeople don't, and they made up this song about him, why didn't he get arrested? Why isn't he in jail for this? Because what excuse is going to be good? Well, no, you don't understand. This book resurrected these people, and they came and tried to kill me, so I had to cut up everybody and burn the thing down, you know?
Maybe they just didn't have any proof. Maybe he got sucked in the vortex for Army of Darkness.
The vortex,
and he was gone for a while. I don't know. I mean, it'd be interesting to see how it does pan out. Because you know we're going to get more of his dad. You just don't get Lee Majors for like a 4-minute.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be an ongoing thing for sure.
Maybe he came back as a raving lunatic about it. Like, that's how he appeared. Like, the only thing they know is that he was saying, I did all these things in order to protect, you know, because I was fighting evil. They all became possessed or whatever. Mm-hmm. But they go and investigate, and there's no evidence except that these people are missing.
Yeah,
so that's all
true.
Maybe that's all they know. Because I imagine the cabin would.
Yeah, everything got sucked into the vortex, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, I don't know how they're going to play that necessarily, because the whole Army of Darkness thing is not really allowed to.
Oh, yeah.
It's not part of the canon of the show.
Even though that picture in the book really
looked like
Army of Darkness.
So they're kind of pushing it around the edges a little bit, but they can't make a direct reference to it yet.
Unless they're able to now. I don't know. I don't know anything about that. That maybe there's something to, maybe they can.
That'd be sweet if they could. I would love that. It would make things a lot easier, you know, as far as exposition is concerned. Mm-hmm. So speaking of Ash's dad, like we've already mentioned, it's Lee Majors, the $6 million man. And right off the bat, we get a joke about that, because he's like, he looks at Ash's hand and it's basically bionic, you know? And he says, Ash is like, oh, yeah, it's better, stronger. And he goes, faster. Remember, that's what they said in the credits, to the opening credits, that they're going to make him better, stronger, faster.
Oh, see, I didn't even catch that. I don't know that much.
I'm not old enough to have watched that show when it aired the first time
I remember
around.
The song, because I would hear that as I was going to bed. But
I watched a lot of reruns on it. So
I saw a ton of syndication. Mm-hmm. I still remember like the lights when they're doing like surgery on him or something like that. So he shoots at Ash because he thinks he's an intruder, you know, and the thing about the hand isn't the first thing he says. It's actually like, oh, Ashley, you look old and bloated. And he's like, yeah, I get it. This guy cannot get a fucking break even from his own dad. Mm. And it sucks to be him. I mean, it's good to be king, but it sucks to be Ash sometimes.
But I think he first saw like a picture of him and his dad, right? Or
something. Yeah, when he was
really, so that I think that warmed his heart a little bit. He saw that his dad still loves him.
Or that his dad just hasn't done any housekeeping for a long, long time.
Or that, yeah.
So,
there'd be a bullet hole in it if he was really pissed off at Ash.
Kelly and Pablo hear the gunshot and come inside. And right away, he's like, who's the illegal? And then he introduces himself to Kelly and he says, you know, this is where I'm Brock Williams, but you could call me Cock.
And he calls her fine and filthy, just like Ash did in season one when he first saw her. Yeah.
So we know where Ash gets his, let's just say, less than savory treatment
charm
of women.
Yeah.
So we learn that the whole town knows about what happened at the cabin, and that, okay, I think we've already kind of covered this when we talked about that, so I'll just skip over that. But his dad tells Ash that, like, look, you ran away from this. You know, that's the problem. You need to stand up for yourself and stuff like that, because I know what really happened. So do you, but they don't. And if you're never going to tell them, then they're never going to know. And so he says, he basically invites Kelly to dinner, but tells the rest of them to get out, especially the illegal.
I like Kelly's fuck the clock shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is cool.
Which is a shirt that Patti Smith wore back in the day.
Okay. I thought that
looked familiar.
It seemed familiar. Yeah. All right, so it seems like everybody in the tiny burg of Elk Grove recognizes Ash and his Delta and wants nothing to do with him. I mean, people getting haircuts, people... did you guys notice that there's a record and bookstore in the background and it's called Groovy Grooves?
Nice.
No.
Yeah, somebody's coming out of that and they just kind of give him the stank eye and keep walking. And so Ash is accosted by a drunk who says he ruined his life. And the retort to that is, yeah, I've ruined a lot of people's lives. And so Pablo gives the guy some coins to get rid of him, and he has a, you know, a please help sign, and it turns into the Necronomicon. So it's kind of reaching a fever pitch in Pablo's mind, whatever the hell's going on, this residual effect that, you know, Ruby's magic did to him.
So, I mean, there's got to be some story there, obviously. This guy comes up and accuses him. I mean, you have any theories about that with your Evil Dead knowledge?
No, I'm coming up with nothing with that. Because
I mean, it could be anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's most likely going to be something that, you know, it could be somebody's brother or cousin or something like that.
I mean, to say ruined his life, I mean, this guy's a hobo. Like, yeah. What possibly related to the cabin could have affected him in that way?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It doesn't even have to be related to the cabin. It could have happened before. I mean, Ashton isn't exactly the most stand-up dude, you know? So it could be it really could be anything.
It would probably be most in line with Ash's character if whatever he did to this guy had nothing to do with the supernatural whatsoever.
Right? Yeah. Exactly. That he just fucked him over. He stole the Airstream from him. I don't know.
Oh, that's probably it.
That's why he's homeless.
Don't let that guy see the Airstream. He'll lose his shit.
So Ash goes into the bar and he's greeted like a pariah, with the exception of Linda Bates.
I caught that.
Now,
she's doomed.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this isn't the same Linda that was his girlfriend, because even though if you go by...
None of them have ever been the same Linda.
None of them have ever been the same Linda as far as actresses. This would be the fourth actress to play that Linda, but there's only... Well, no, this would be the fifth actress to play that Linda, but because the fourth one was the head inside of
the vice
in the last episode of season one. So that Linda's dead. This is a different Linda, but why they chose to call her Linda, I don't know. Maybe just to confuse us.
There was a little pause because he's like, Linda Bates. And then having the last name Bates.
Yeah.
It's a bit ominous, too. So maybe she's not doomed.
Possibly.
Nah, come on. She's doomed.
But this
she's going to start wearing her mommy's clothes and rocking in a rocking chair or something.
Linda is played by Michelle Hurd, who, when I looked on IMDb, she has a list a mile long of the stuff that she's done. This woman likes to work. She's been in a lot of stuff. But I saw her most recently as the district attorney in Daredevil season 2.
I didn't even put that together. Son of a gun.
And she is married to Sheriff Emery. And Sheriff Emery is still a little bit raw about being teased by Ash pretty relentlessly. Calling him safety boy and making him pee his pants by not letting him in the locker room.
Which is pretty shitty.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's
pretty pissy.
Teenage Ash, though.
He looked familiar, though.
Does he look familiar to you? Does the cop look familiar to you? He's played by Stephen Lovett, who is, he played Tullius from Spartacus Gods of the Arena.
I think Tullius.
Tullius.
And he was the one that got buried in the arena. Bodiatus took him out. And in the prequel season, the Gannicus season.
Yeah. Nice.
He was friends with Salonius, wasn't he?
Yeah. He was the one. I gotcha. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. You have to see. I went to his IMDb and I saw a picture of him with that hair. And I was like, there we go.
All yeah, right, that's the thing. I'll have to look him up for sure.
Trying to think, what was the most egregious thing that he did that would help you remember him? He beat the shit out of Bodiatus and pissed on him.
Oh, yes. The pee-pee scene.
Him. Yeah.
Well, he got his comeuppance in Spartacus, and he'll probably get his comeuppance in this, too.
Yeah. Oh, so, yeah, for sure.
So I thought this was a pretty good scene because, you know, the cop pulls him to the side. He's like, you know, you've got some real balls showing up in this town. And he's like, yeah, I do. You know, notice I never wear gym shorts. And he tells him, like, you need to get the fuck out of Dodge because these people, they know what you did. They don't want you around.
Yeah, they're going to lynch you.
Yeah, everybody starts doing the Ashy Slashy routine. And so Ash actually sticks up for himself. He turns around. He's like, okay, I've had enough. He breaks the bar glass. And then he's like, all right, listen up, you primitive screwhead speech kind of thing. And some of this good stuff that came out of here was, yep, that's me. I'm the boomstick butcher with the chainsaw hand. That needs to be on a t-shirt.
Yeah,
somebody make that happen.
But Sheriff Emery kind of had a good burn because he was like, I'm all grown up. You can ask around. And that's right when he put his hand on Linda. So it's like,
we're married.
Well, you can guarantee the sheriff's going to end up pissing his pants at one point, too. I mean,
yeah.
You know that joke will come back.
The first deadite he sees, it'll just be a wet spot.
Exactly.
I mean, maybe he's not a totally bad guy. I mean, Ash was a bully to him, clearly, back in the day. I think this guy is still, you know, most people kind of like shy away from those bullies. This guy's sticking up for himself. He thinks Ash is a crazy friend killer. I mean, he's not really in the wrong.
No, based
on all that.
That's a good point.
Self-professed murderer. And then when his wife walks off, Ash is clearly staring at her ass while he's trying to talk to him.
And going,
Exactly. Yeah, it'd be like, hey, motherfucker.
Eyes right here. So Ash gives his speech to the town and he's like, after I save all of your asses, you won't see me again for another 30 years. Dick sticks. And that's I don't know. I've replayed that scene 3 or 4 times because it's just so fun to hear him say dick sticks the way that he says it.
And I got a text message from Steve calling me a dick stick today too. So
I had to. I couldn't resist.
That's awesome.
That's going to be my new one. Like anytime anybody is just giving me a fuss about anything, I'm going to be like, you're a dick stick.
Oh, yeah. Quit being a dick stick. I mean, it's going to be nice.
So Pablo's outside walking around because they split up to kind of look for Ruby. And like an idiot, he goes into the alleyway where he sees a deadite floating in midair.
I was like why would you do that? Doing?
I know.
Why would you go in there?
Poor Pablo.
It's a trap. Very inadvisably. So he goes down the alley and he sees a badass gothic version of Ruby who uses the Nomicon to blast his face again. And so he's got the book on his face and you're just, at first I was like thinking this is probably a dream sequence or it's something that's going on in his head. And I was right. But when he starts to pull it off, it looks really gory and nasty. And apparently it was gelatin.
Hamburger meat.
What's that?
It looked like hamburger meat.
Hamburger meat.
Oh yeah. It was nasty.
It was the little after the show thing said it was they used gelatin for it because I guess it was an old 80s movie trick.
Huh.
You know, before they had the CGI and whatnot.
So
you could kind of dig in and still have space to do it because, you know, and make it look real.
That's pretty genius.
Or not necessarily real per se. But
Ruby looked awesome there.
Oh, she looked bad.
Yeah, that was neat. I like that. It was like one of those almost like it kind of reminded me of Lord of the Rings when they have that negative like the
Galadriel.
Yeah. Whenever the ring is on and, you know.
Yeah, she gets all scary.
When they're tempted by the ring, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the invisible too. Is that what you're talking about? Also when he goes invisible and walks around?
Right, like how everything's like a negative print.
Yeah, yeah.
So Pablo explains what he saw and Ash figures out that it's the crematorium. So they head over to that. So they head over that way and it's time to get some answers. And we have a nice little scene where Ash digs around in the Delta's trunk to get some stuff out to get ready to fight. And so I made a quick little inventory of all of the things that I could identify in the Delta's trunk that belong to Ash. And we have shotgun, ammo, cologne, paperback copy of A Farewell to Arms, a #1 foam hand.
A what?
Foam hand. Yep, there's a #1 foam hand. There's probably several blue shirts, duct tape, what looked to be a bag or a package of adult diapers, but I'm not quite sure on that one. It might have been Depends.
He is wearing dentures.
several porno mags and one Kandarian dagger.
Nice.
If that's not a collection of shit, I don't know what is.
Adult diapers.
I'm not sure if that's what it was.
He's been whizzing the whole time.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, he did say he was whizzing the whole time. So it could be. It looked like it was fuzzy. You couldn't see.
That would explain how he does it.
Yeah. He wears adult diapers. Unless he knows he's going to get some action that night from.
Well, you're on a long road trip. I mean, you know, it's not that bad of an idea.
He learned about that woman from NASA, and he was like, good idea.
So the group enters the crematorium ready for battle. Ash reminds them, look, these weapons probably aren't going to hurt Ruby. Just make sure you knock her down. Then we jab her with the dagger, and then we're out. So
that's when you see, I think, Kelly all like,
she's ready to go. Ash immediately smacks his head on a pipe, and we are treated to a homage to Freddy's Boiler Room. All the pipes start hissing. The crematorium, I don't know what you would actually call them, the blast furnaces or whatever pop open and the fire comes out. That's
blast, blast, blast furnace.
Yeah, I know you did not just pull out a Slapshot reference on this.
The song's really repetitive.
You hate that song.
I do.
So anyway, there's blast furnaces open up, fire coming out, and I think this is it's paying tribute to Nightmare on Elm Street.
For sure.
That's what I think. So, Ash, happy October, everybody. You know, Nightmare on Elm Street, Ash versus Evil Dead. Let's celebrate the season. Ash and his shadow have a little Three Stooges action, and his shadow is revealed to be a grown-up creepy kid who immediately starts beating his ass.
Right? Okay.
So Pablo and Kelly are separated as Kelly gets dragged into some nasty water by one of the creepy kids who looked like it looked like a shadow came out and grabbed her and pulled her in.
So yeah,
these creepy kids got some power.
Yeah, they've got power over shadow and diarrhea vomit.
Diarrhea vomit. Mm-hmm. That's the best one to have. I guess they're not really creepy kids anymore. We should just call them creepy teens.
Yeah.
Creepy tweens.
Tweens. Creepy, I like creepy tweens.
Creepy tweens.
They're really expressive.
The Twilight crew.
Their facial.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The makeup and special effects on them is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I didn't look it up. I don't know if it's the same person playing each one that we see up close. Like the one that came after Pablo and the one that came after. Anyway.
I bet they are. I bet you it's like one that they have them do that because the makeup's probably so expensive to do and everything.
Yeah.
Or so time intensive. And then the other ones are kind of CGI'd in the background.
Could be. Or just like cut in.
Yeah. So Pablo is cornered by a contortionist creepy tween who's doing the spider walk, just not down steps. Ash fights off his creepy tween and he says, "Run home and cry to mama." And it's applicable at last. He can actually run home and cry to his mother. So we get a little bit more Three Stooges when he's banging into the pipes after he makes his grand declaration. And then he gets Ash in the face. And M pointed out that this is a crematorium. So that's people's bodies.
I didn't even think about that. That's fucked up.
I didn't either.
I think that's why he was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. Because I was just thinking it's Ash on Ash. Yeah, haha, funny. And then she was like, they're in a crematorium. I'm
That gag has been done on like Laurel and Hardy, the Three Stooges. I mean, that's like classic old school gag.
But all of the cuss words that are flying around, all of the blood and vomit and nastiness and decapitations, etc. And he just says, my goodness. Like you're truly exasperated when you don't even curse.
Yeah.
That's how you know it.
Well, I mean,
So Pablo, interestingly enough, grabs his brujo uncle's necklace, and he becomes invisible to the creepy kid, to the creepy tween. I thought that was pretty cool.
That was awesome.
I think this is going to be the genesis of the power that helps him overcome whatever Ruby's going to throw at him, because Ruby's not done with him.
Or it's the beginning of him turning into the big bad in next season. Because he's got magic powers, and he's, you know, the Necronomicon might feel that. That's why it's still attached to him.
Yeah.
Maybe it's gonna guide him. It's gonna be his mentor,
embodiment of the book. If he gets it back on his head and breaks away from Ruby,
I think Kelly would be the one to be more likely to become the big bad because the Deadites are trying to turn her.
Yeah, true.
They're probably going to try and turn all of them except Ash, because that's a lost cause.
Yeah, they're just going to fucking torture that guy.
They're going to torture and try to kill him, but they're going to try to turn the other two. Mm-hmm. And I bet Ruby is going to try to turn Pablo. She's going to be like, if she senses something in him, you know, pull him aside and be like, look, kid, if you, you know, when this is all over and you come with me, you can actually have sex.
One thing I expected there to be acknowledgement of Pablo as their father. There was nothing like that.
Right, exactly. I guess he was just the vessel.
He's just meat.
Yeah. You're not even my real dad. I don't have to. I always just remember that shit as a joke. I forgot what comedian told it. It was like in the late 80s or early 90s, and Jesus was saying that to Joseph. I don't have to listen to you. You're not even my real dad. So Kelly reaches into the water that she's been dumped into to try to retrieve her gun, only to end up fighting herself. And herself, Deadite version, is saying, you're stronger than Ash. You should lead. You know, you don't need to be falling. So they start punching each other at the same time, mirror image style. So I thought to myself, what's the only thing better than one Kelly? Two Kellys. And I was right. So then she finds that she's just choking herself. You know, and it's a position we've all been in before, you know, choking the life out of yourself.
Especially if I was trying to get something from my mom at like 6. I remember trying to choke myself. I was a rotten child. It's like, fine, I'm going to kill myself.
Did it work?
No. I'm a quitter.
Yeah. Did it work? No, I'm here now. I did not kill myself at age 6.
I tried to go to tongue swallowing after that, and that didn't work out either. No, I'm kidding.
Apparently, that's not so much of a real thing. Like, you can't swallow your tongue. You can
it's attached.
It can block your air passage.
Yeah.
And give you, you know, make you pass out.
Yeah, that's why I failed at it.
Like, this isn't working.
God damn it. So Kelly starts hearing the taunting, like you guys were talking about earlier, the main deadite, you know, tact. And it's the "we're going to get you" from the original movie. So Kelly pulls up the machine gun and she's like, "Get this." And she starts shooting the place up. And you know immediately what's going to happen. Anytime you shoot a hole in a wall where the deadites are,
exactly,
you're going to get hit in the face with the red stuff. So she wants to pull the, help me out here. What's the guy's name?
It's Die Hard.
Die Hard. What's his name?
John
McClane. Nice pull. Nice.
I like that movie.
Me too. I love Die Hard.
She tries to pull the John McClane and she's like, "Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker." Okay. And she stops and sees the blood seeping out. She's like, "Oh, fuck." I think she says shit, actually. And bloodbath. Once again, you know, using all of their fake blood. This one was easy, though. It's just disgusting water with some food coloring in it.
It was thick at first when it was coming out, and then it...
Yeah, it was really thick. In fact, a lot of the blood was throughout very deep in color, I mm-hmm. thought.
Especially in the bar at the very beginning when they both get covered, Kelly and Pablo, it's like, ugh, fuck.
Yeah.
Zachary. See,
you think about the shower inside of Ash's trailer that they all have to share. It's just got to be red.
Murdered.
Just, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just like, it's never coming out. Mm-mm. It's never coming out. So Ash meets Ruby, and he is not impressed by her sob story. He actually makes fun of her. He's like, "Oh, me." And she's like, "My children have turned on me. They're trying to kill me to get the book." And he's like, "Welcome to my world, sweet cheeks."
Can we address her hair? Why is her hair pink? Did it turn pink? Did her hair turn white and it's pink with blood stains or what?
That's what I'm thinking. Because at the beginning of the show, it looked like only the center section was done. And then by the end, it all was. So I don't know, man. Maybe, I don't know. I really don't.
She had that caustic vomit thrown on her when mm-hmm. her first creepy tween like puked on her, and there was like, it was like acid because there was all this shit coming up. So
that could be
she's impervious to a lot of stuff, because I mean she jumped right in the fire last season and you know mm-hmm. she came out all right. Mm-hmm. So but I think her hair is probably a little bit less resilient than her overall body, but I think it's trying to show you that she's generally been in, you know, scrapping peril with these guys the whole time. She's in peril. She's a woman in need. So they go back and forth, and she's asking for help, and he's like, "Look, I should be right now on my second keg getting ready to put my spicy man meat into a mother-daughter sandwich."
She's disgusted.
Yeah, she's just like, as unappetizing as that sounds. This woman wrote the Necronomicon, apparently, and she's grossed out by Ash's sexual antics. That's pretty bad. This thing was inked in blood, you know, talking about human sacrifice and the whole nine yards.
Bound in human flesh.
Yeah, she's grossed out by Ash. It makes sense, though. I mean. So Pablo pulls Kelly up from the blood soup because she was getting dragged down by a skeleton who's coming to get her, and they hug. And it's a very nice moment.
Yes. Those things make you bond.
Yeah, I imagine.
Sure.
Deadites.
Yeah. Deadites,
they've
blood.
Got the silver lining. Bonding.
So Ruby gets pulled away, and Ash sees her surrounded by three creepy kids, and they realize that she doesn't really have the book. It's a phony. It's, you know, an autopsy procedural book. And so they start, like, really digging into her. They grow out some claws, and they're cutting her open and stuff like that. And this is where we get my Metal Mike quote of the episode, which is, "Do I save her because I should or because she's hot?" So he decides to save her, and he comes in, and he says, "All right, you naked assholes. it's time to pick on somebody your own size." It's like Paul said earlier, it's hard to pick a quote from this episode because every time you turn around, somebody's saying something that's worth writing down.
Exactly.
I only remembered all of them because I actually had to write them down because I'm doing the recap. Otherwise, it would be like, "Oh, there was that one and that one and that one." So we see that Ash finally gets a chainsaw into one of them, but these guys are impervious to mortal weapons. And it's Ruby who has to take off the Kandarian dagger off of the shotgun and stab one of her own progeny in the back. And then that's the only thing that does it. And then, of course, he's got this gaping hole in him, and he's just bleeding out his guts. And his it's all one color, but it doesn't make it any less disgusting.
Yeah, it's like they're made out of a giant turd.
Yeah.
I liked when she chuckled when that one grabbed the book, and it was a decoy. It was like an anatomy book or something like that.
Yeah.
And that slight little chuckle, she's like, and then that almost was my quote, actually. It's just her doing that. But anyway.
Well, she seems upset that one of her kids is actually going to die. And she's like, I'm sorry, I couldn't save you. So I guess I don't know if this is something to watch out for in future episodes. She wants to make a deal with Ash to destroy them, but I think it's only because
she can't control them.
Yeah, she can't control mm-hmm. them. If she could control them, she'd be like, get rid of these guys. You shouldn't have came back to Michigan.
Yeah.
So she gives back the dagger, and she admits that she needs help to fight her creepy tweens.
That was like a spaghetti western standoff, like size up, because you had that music, and before she hands the dagger back to them, they're just staring at each other, and you got the...
Yeah, you don't know. I mean, these are two enemies, and she's got a dagger, he's got a gun, so it's kind of like, what's going to happen? And she could go either way with it, and then she hands it over to him. So the other two come up, Pablo and Kelly, and they're ready to just tear her a new one, and he's like, hold on. She wants to make a deal with us. She wants us to help her. So he turns and looks at him. I thought this was great. He turns and looks at him and says, she needs our help. What do you guys think? Kelly doesn't say anything. And Pablo shakes his head no. So he turns around and goes, okay. You know,
we're going to help you.
That's your consensus? Why did you even consult them in the first place?
Well, her neck's strangely beautiful. So God,
she's
going to help her.
Strangely beautiful neck. So... Ash tries to make the margarita joke again, and they call him on it. They're like, you already said that, like, word for word. And he's like, oh, wow, maybe I have that bad memory disease. And he's like, what, Alzheimer's? Why are you talking about Alzheimer's? That's a bad memory disease. Why would you say that?
So he's making a joke, right?
For sure.
Because, like, I'm like, whoa, does he really have bad memory? Do we have something to worry about?
He got called out on doing a joke, so he nailed him with one right after just to make sure he still had it.
I hope so, because Alzheimer's is a really serious problem, and it's a little too heavy for this show to handle. So I'm glad that it's just a joke. So at the end of it, they kind of all four of them now, they square off and look into the distance and say, let's go save the world. And that's the end.
So good. And a good soundtrack again to this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who is the band? You looked it up.
Well, Neil Merriweather, and the song is called Star Rider.
It's a great, like, 70s rock song.
Mm-hmm. It's a good driving song.
Yeah.
I would drive to that.
I'm not familiar with Neil Merriweather, actually.
I'll have to ask my dad about it. He likes a lot of those bands. Mm-hmm. He knows
Southern rock.
He knows way more about music than I ever really give him credit for. I actually do give him credit for that. I'll take that back. He knows a lot about music.
I was about to say, you just did.
Yeah. I can't say that I don't.
Neil Merriweather is a Canadian rock singer, bass player, and songwriter. He has recorded and performed with musicians including Steve Miller, Dave Mason, Lita Ford, Billy Joel, Rick James, and Wilson Pickett.
Damn.
Rick James and Lita Ford. Not many people can say they've worked with both of those.
Right.
All right. So.
Feedback time.
Let's get to the little bit of feedback.
Already?
All right. It's like an extra bonus.
So first up, we got Metal Mike, and he says, let me know if this was too long. Thank you. No, Metal Mike, this is just perfect, actually. Good length.
That's what she said.
Hey-o.
All right. He says, what is going on, you bunch of deadite Mr. Falcons? That would be just Paul. Glad to be back talking about this amazing show. Firstly, I would like to say that I enjoyed watching this episode while drinking coffee out the fucking sweet mug I won last year from you guys. Thank you, Paul.
Awesome. Awesome.
For those who don't do feedback or leave iTunes reviews, you're missing out. Not only can you support your favorite podcast, but you could be like Shoddy Gray and I, who won the kick-ass mugs last year. I am sure you can find a pic of them in the Facebook or Twitter photos for No Ship if you want to check them out. Once again, we start off a season with so many potential routes it can take. It makes watching week to week that much better. I am confused about Pablo's necklace. I didn't do a rewatch of season one, but I remember the necklace being more of a curse to him last year with the book acting weird around it. But now he can use it to go invisible around his grown-up monster children. It obviously made me think of Lord of the Rings. Maybe by doing this, he is alerting some evil spirit of his existence. Even if it ends up being the same premise, I wouldn't mind the similarities because I think the concept is still feasible in this universe. I think it's safe to say that Pablo ripping his own face off was the best part of this episode. It was utterly disgusting. The fact that he is having these visions is not a good sign. At this point, Ruby still can't be trusted fully, and if she figures out how to control their monster kids better, she could easily pull the same trick on Pablo again. At this point, though, I would say Ash's dad would be an easier target for obvious reasons. I realize Ash hitting his head on the pipes was more like a Three Stooges thing, but it reminded me of how Tim Allen used to hit his head off the pipe heading into the basement on Home Improvement. Both are Michigan men, and it brings us back to a comment from my season one feedback. M, no need to grunt this time. Last time was perfect. Thank God. I don't want to do that.
She has grunt PTSD from that.
But I'm from Michigan, too, by the way. And he says, my Metal Mike quote of the week goes to Ash with, I'm not drunk enough to know if this is good weird or bad weird, but I'll get there, though. Take care. Metal Mike from New Hampshire. Dig it.
Dig it. That was awesome.
Thank you. Thank you, Metal Mike, for that awesome feedback to start out the season right. And just so you know, we've been talking about this Anthrax show that we went to, Em and I and another friend of ours, for a while now. We've been talking about it since June, I think. That's when we got the tickets. We went the other night, and it was phenomenal.
Yeah, it was an awesome show.
Sworn Enemy opened, and then Death Angel put out a ripping set, and then Anthrax took the stage, and they just killed it. Killed it, killed it, killed it. They played stuff from every era of Belladonna singing, and they're just... I mean, I can't say enough good stuff about it. YouTube it. Type in, you know, like watch any of their shows on this tour. It's so good. My throat was just lacerated after for singing along to everything.
Mm-hmm. I think going to a metal show occasionally or frequently, whichever, is a necessary component to a happy life.
For sure. Yeah.
It's a great time.
Yeah, well said. It brings a certain energy and vitality to it, you know, that.
And metalheads are awesome.
Yeah. They're really nice people, you know. Mm-hmm. If you get on their bad side and you're an asshole to them, you know, it's maybe not the best thing in the world.
No, they come up and come quick.
Right. But, you know, otherwise, there's a camaraderie there and you feel like you're all in this together. Somebody falls down, you help them up. You give somebody else a shirt off your back, you know. And it's just a good surrounding. It's a good community to be around.
Hell yeah.
Well, so what do you think what Metal Mike was saying about Pablo's necklace? You guys have any thoughts on that?
I think the nature of it, in my opinion, is still yet to be determined, because he was able to hide from evil, but that doesn't mean the necklace is completely good, because the necklace was gravitating towards the Necronomicon last season. It was like acting like a lodestone or whatever you call them.
I think it's just the source for him to draw power, you know what I mean? Because he wanted to turn invisible. He didn't know what he was doing. He just felt the jiggle on his chest, and I think it's just what gives him the strength to use his Brujo-style magic, you know what I mean? So I think it's just what it's like his faith, you know, it's just what he uses to do what he needs to,
yeah,
which I think as the season goes, he'll use it more and more and realize he has these extra powers, and then that's when he turns into the big nasty.
Yeah, because I think whatever power comes from that necklace could go either way, and it just wants to be used.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it depends on the user.
Or he'll take it off and leave it when he leaves with the Necronomicon and the mask. Now, where do you think the Necronomicon's hiding? At his dad's house? His dad's probably banging Ruby.
Already, yeah.
That's going to be an awkward dinner table.
Oh, yeah, it'd be wonderful.
It's in that homeless guy's backpack or something.
Right,
That's why his sign was changing. Yes, and Ruby will have an easy time with Ash's dad. I believe that for sure, as Metal Mike said. In fact, I can't wait to hear him say to her, "You can just call me Cock," and how she's going to react to that. All right, so next up, we got Castle Grayskull.
All right.
Nice.
And it feels like it's been forever.
I know.
Hey guys, Grayskull here. Can't believe it's been almost a year since the opener of season one. So just watch the opener for season two. Great episode, as we have come to expect from Ash and the gang. I felt it was a little short on the gags, but made up for it with the amount of blood and gore. Also, I found it a lot more sweary, which ain't a bad thing. Lee Majors as Ash's dad was brilliant. Props to the casting team. Love the hand gag about being it better, stronger, and faster. So got a couple of theories straight off the bat. The way Pablo's hand was twitching when he was about to draw Ruby, are we thinking he may lose it to demon possession and maybe have to chop it off? And the other theory is, when Kelly was in the blood-filled room, is it possible that she may have died and Pablo rescued evil Kelly?
Ooh.
What a huge What a huge plot twist that would be. So I'm rating this 7.5 Evil Lori dolls out of 10.
Oh, 7.5, huh?
Until the boomstick speaks again, catch you down the road, Grayskull out. Oh, forgot my quote of the week? Yeah, I'm the boomstick butcher and with the chainsaw hand.
Nice.
You know, it sounds like the lyrics to a Danzig song.
Yeah, it does.
I'm the boomstick butcher with a chainsaw hand.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Don't you mess around with me.
Gotta get the woes. Go! Go!
So we think you make it a Misfits song if you do that.
Well, Danzig fronting the Misfits. All right.
So, all right, let's talk about his theories. What do you guys think about that? You think that Pablo's going to have a possessed hand, or do you think that's treading territory that we've already covered?
Well, it's not like we couldn't use the gag again. I mean, I would love to see Pablo's version of the evil hand. It could be totally different. Could be a timid evil hand.
See, I think he'll be able to overcome it. So I don't think he'll actually have to revert to cutting off his hand if that's what's going on. He'll be able to use his Brujo powers to kind of like flush it out of his system.
Yeah, I think he has a whole body possession thing he's got to worry about.
Yeah. I don't think it's the evil Kelly, though.
No, but what a cool idea, though. That's a cool idea.
I do think it's more of a temptation, so I think she is probably eventually going to try to lead.
Yeah, for sure. I mean...
Well, she's itching to go all the time.
Exactly. She's a badass.
If you look at what she's driven by, she wants to get Ruby 6 feet under, or at least get this book back to... You know, she wants to do the resolution that was promised to her by Ash in the first season.
Yeah.
But she also has a conscience, and she's the only one worried about these sinkholes and the 200% rise in crime and stuff like that. So she's actually got a conscience about it, and she wants everything to be set to rights before they're done with stuff. So if she takes a leadership role, it would be to make sure that they don't go back and be water trash in Jacksonville. Because that's just a dead end for all of them.
Yeah, nobody wants to go back to Jacksonville except Ash.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean...
I noticed he was derisive to his hometown the way that Kelly and Pablo were derisive to the water trash.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. He probably looks at all of them as like hunter trash or lumber trash.
Well, he called them inbred and everything.
Yeah. Some of that's probably just because they rejected him.
Oh, you know? All of it Some has of it... to do with it. You know what I mean? That's nobody believe. Well, that's the thing. He's a self-professed murderer. I mean, he doesn't deny it. So, of course, everybody's going to hate you when you're walking around going, yeah, I killed a few people and chopped my own hand off. And that would be awkward.
But I'm not crazy.
Oh, yeah, I'm not a bad person.
I did all those things because they had to be done. I'm not crazy.
He sounds like Charles Manson. I mean, no one likes him.
All right, so now we have finished our coverage of Season 2, Episode 1 of Ash vs. Evil Dead. Looking forward to a whole season of all murder, all guts, all fun. This has been a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Paul.
And I'm your host, Em.
And remember, everybody, shoot first, think never.